This season, we'll be further exploring each topic, hanging out with experts and enthusiasts of all kinds for more strange stories, social commentary, and the myths that make America tick. I'm your host, Chelsea Weber Smith. Alyssa Bennett is co-host of the C Word podcast on Luminary, as well as a decorated historian of bad behavior. By sifting through the cultural trash heap of history, her podcast takes deep dives into the lives of famous women who've been called crazy through history, the stories that were told about them through the tabloid press, and the real life that was happening behind the scenes. Alyssa is also the author of four zines, collections of essays reflecting on dozens of fascinating characters in pop culture deviance. She mines the depths of the internet for strange truths and even stranger gossip, weaving in personal anecdotes of her own. Today we'll be discussing why we love trashy media of all kinds, using our brains that they said would certainly be rotten by now. We'll even give the final thought, usually reserved for Jerry Springer, to Alyssa's child genius, Ollie. So join us in this cultural trash heap, where I promise we'll find just a little treasure. Hey, everybody. I'm very excited about this next episode. We're going to have some true, real, authentic fun. And I'm very happy about that, as I'm sure you may be, considering our climate. So we are talking today to Alyssa Bennett, who is co-host of The C Word on Luminary, which is a podcast that is definitely one of my favorites. And she is the author of many, many zines, which we'll talk about. And on another note, before we say hello to Alyssa, our producer Miranda is going to join us today for the recording, because we've been consuming all of the same reality content now for the entirety of the pandemic, mostly from the early 2000s. And so she's going to pop in here with some extra commentary. So hello to both of you.
I'm so excited to be with you guys. I feel like I've known you my whole life. I feel like I used to babysit you.
I feel the same way.
You could still babysit both of us.
Yeah.
It's a true honor to be in the presence of the foremost historian of bad behavior.
Wow. Here I am. I got my degree from Phoenix University.
Online?
Yes.
Okay. So, Alyssa, how did you become a historian of bad behavior? Or more broadly, what was your personal journey from your early childhood into this wonderful world that we are going to call trashy media?
Love trashy media. Well, you know, I grew up in the 80s. I was born in the late 70s. I grew up in the woods. Like, to get to like a place where you could buy a stick of gum, you had to walk for 30 minutes or something. So really in the middle of nowhere. We had four channels of television, just the classics, PBS, NBC, CBS, and ABC. And because it was like a relatively isolated place to live, and I was a latchkey kid, I really was raised on television. So when I think about when I was, you know, 10 until I was probably 17, I think I clocked minimum, often more, but a minimum of 8 hours of television a day. So I think a lot of the very formative experiences of my young life and adolescence were televisual. So I remember Waco. I remember, you know, like these flashpoints. I remember being, I don't know, probably like seven, and seeing there was a newscast on, and I've tried to find it many times. I can't locate it, but it was a local newscast, and they were reporting on someone who'd jumped off a bridge into a river. And live on the newscast, the reporter was like, "Oh my God, oh my God," because the body was floating down the river. So these moments that would sort of rupture regular programming with either scandal or disaster, or these socially significant moments of rupture that I watched on TV, interspersed with classic daytime programming, which was, you know, it was the golden age of daytime talk shows. So I think a lot of the way that I thought about things was formed visually through that experience. And then I think also I was always a relatively kind of sneaky, secretive kid. So I had a TV in my room, and I would, like, I remember very clearly when the Preppy Murder, can you believe I remember the fucking Preppy Murder? Well, guess what, bitches? I remember it. I'm old enough to remember it. So I had like a little black and white TV in my room. Like when I took a bath, I would bring this black and white TV into the bathroom. I just wanted to be with my TV all the time. So I remember right around the time that Robert Chambers was about to go to trial. I don't know how old I was. It was maybe like, in my head, it happened around the same time that baby Jesse fell in the well, which was like another major news story of my childhood. But I think there's like a year or two separating it. It's like 1986 or something. So I had this little TV in my room, and he was about to go to trial. And that show Hard Copy was on TV. That was Maury Povich's show before he had Maury. And there's no contemporary corollary for it, but it was like a big subgenre of crime, celebrity, scandal news. And it was a half hour program. And I remember they announced that they had like some insane video of Robert Chambers that was incredibly incriminating. It would show at like 4 o'clock in the morning. And I somehow willed myself to wake up for it and turned the TV on really quiet and in my room alone. And it was this video of Robert Chambers at a party after he'd murdered Jennifer Levin. And he was pulling the heads off of these Barbie dolls and talking in this kind of squealing little girl's voice. And I just, it was like, it's these kind of little traumas, I think, that attracted me to this sort of specific interest that I have, I guess.
So if I may ask, what was your parents' perspective on you consuming all of this, or did they just have no idea?
I had a pretty unsupervised childhood. So, you know, my dad worked all the time. My mom worked all like a regular job and then went to night school for like years and years and years. And I was alone a lot, I think. Someone wrote an essay on television. I don't remember who, but it's this essay that is basically suggesting that all of the most creative people that he knew were like TV addicts. And I think that it just kind of cracks open these vistas that are not appreciated within high culture, I guess.
Yeah, I was definitely, and I think Miranda too, we were both pretty unsupervised kids a lot of the time as well.
And TV kids.
TV, yeah. Hours of TV. And it's still so, as we'll probably get into what we've been all viewing during this pandemic.
We're still unsupervised because Alyssa hasn't shown up to babysit us yet.
You're latchkey kidding still.
We are.
So just to stay in the genre of trash talk shows for a second, because I know that you've been just eating fistfuls of it for weeks now, maybe even. And so on our episode, we kind of covered like a specific sliver of trash talk. So I was wondering if you, like what you were finding yourself, like what's memorable from your big deep dive? Can you give us like a highlight reel?
Yeah, but I also, you know what I was thinking about? Jerry Springer used to be like kind of a more serious talk show. It wasn't always that sort of bacchanal of tacky, artificial family feuding. It wasn't always like that. So I definitely watched that. The things that I've been revisiting lately, my favorite show was Jenny Jones. I loved it. I think rewatching it now, I understand that the audience comments were probably scripted. But she would always have like the funniest audience members. They would come up with these disses for like teenage girls that were so funny. And so rewatching that, it was interesting to really, there are not so many episodes of it on YouTube, unfortunately. And I think that there's not going to be, obviously, as you addressed in your show, a major reclamation of that program because of the scandal that ended it. Because I think that a lot of those talk shows, they're sort of more available than hers. I think YouTube has like, I don't know, 6 episodes. But she was big on things like Me and My Mom Play Guys Together, or like You're Too Fat to Wear That, or, you know, it was like a humiliation kiln. But you know what? I'm a big rewatcher. I like to rewatch things. So in going back and watching episodes of things on YouTube, I you know, I think I've watched the Club Kid episodes that were on like every major talk show like a million times. I love Gigi Allen episodes. They're incredible. It's always interesting for me to, you know, obviously with retrospect, but identify these kind of major precursors for big social rupture. So the Club Kids definitely, like, people, if people haven't watched them, go watch them all. I think there's like five.
R.I.P. Michael Alleg.
Damn. I should have emailed him. I never even thought about it.
That was a missed opportunity.
I know.
Michael Alleg was one of the Club Kids, which is a great example of sort of the mixture that we kind of wanted to maybe talk about of like high and low art. Mm-hmm. They were sort of early rave kids who created sort of a whole fantasy world of what, flamboyant dress and party drugs, and it ended in murder.
And then in a Macaulay Culkin biopic.
Yeah.
Seth Green, too. God, I love that movie. But they even reenact, I don't remember which episode they reenact, but whatever talk show they went on, they do, like, I think even like a word-for-word reenactment of it. And I remember that so well from that movie. It might be my favorite scene from it. But I think that shows sort of how iconic that was.
I found that I did it again. I always think if you do something twice unconsciously, it means you really mean it or you really believe in it. And I found myself watching those episodes of these Club Kids and Googling all of the sort of satellite figures. My big passion is a satellite figure. Like, I don't always like the star. I don't always want the Michael Alleg, but I want the sort of hanger on who's been rendered completely obsolete by time. So I was looking them all up. And as I was looking them up, I was like, oh, I did this the last time I watched this. Like, you Google Princess Botanical and you see her and you're like, oh yeah, I already saw this. It probably extends to the format of a talk show, but there's something comfortable about revisiting something familiar. There's something comfortable about re